Grumpy Old Geeks, a weekly talk show hosted by Brian Schulmeister and Jason DeFilippo, discussing the finer points of what went wrong on the internet and who's to blame.
Welcome to Grumpy Old Geeks. I'm Jason DeFilippo.
And I'm Brian Schulmeister. You stopped doing the GOG thing?
I'm just too tired, man. That, you know how much effort that takes to wake that up this early in the morning?
Yeah. They did not do Yo MTV Raps at 8 a.m. I guarantee you that.
No, they did not. They did not, for sure. But I do have a little follow-up to start with. My live stream was last Wednesday on Adorama XP.
I saw some positive feedback.
Man, I tell you what, we got it easy. Podcasting is so much easier than doing the live stream.
Right.
My throat was sore for, 2 days. Because you just talk for 2 hours straight, because there's no chat back and forth. There's a chat room, so you're always shucking and jiving. I'm running two computers, multiple microphones, a video switcher, an audio interface, doing demos, and trying to read the chat and keep up at the same time.
But see, you're trying to be professional. Don't most people just hold up their phone?
I guess so, but... I know. I was trying to make
it hard on yourself.
I was trying to make a good first impression. So I'm going to be back again this Wednesday, 8 to 10.
Okay.
Eastern. I told you it's early. But I got to say, it was fun. It was a lot of work, but it was fun. And I couldn't have done it without Seth Miranda. He was my Twitch Sherpa, and hopefully will continue to be.
He taught me
a bunch of stuff with OBS and Twitch and all that stuff. So a huge thank you to Seth. His stuff will be linked in the show notes. So check him out.
Awesome. We got a bit of follow-up from somebody who actually lives somewhere where we talked about something. We were talking about the drone delivery testing going on in Christiansburg, Virginia. And Pete lives there.
All right.
So he wrote in. Well, he lives close by. Well, I'll let him explain. Hey, guys, I listened to your episode where you mentioned the drone deliveries. I live close to Christiansburg, not actually in town, but out in the country. I do see the drones flying overhead when I shop there. Everybody treats it as a novelty. Ooh, is that one of those drones? I don't know anybody who actually lives in the delivery area. I don't really see it as being practical for our area. The middle school was using it to deliver books during lockdown, but the librarian wished that the delivery area was larger so she could reach more of her students. We are just too spread out. Population density is too low, so distances are too far and demand too low. I think they're using Christiansburg as a test area. Anyway, stay grumpy. Yeah, that makes sense. You would want to test somewhere where there was not high population density in case one fell out of the sky.
Yeah, true that, true that. It would be better if, they could get more books to kids, which I thought that's a great use case.
If only we didn't have some sort of technology, say, a bookmobile.
A bookmobile.
That Brian, we have had since I was a child.
It's COVID. It's COVID.
Right.
So. COVID air, C-19 air delivery, right? Coming right up. Do you remember on the bookmobiles? I used to love this, man. You'd get that little newsprint flyer when you were in class, and you had to fill everything out, pick out the books you want, and then do all the totals and go home and beg, borrow, and steal the money. Go in, give it to the teacher, because you had 2 days to fill it out and give it to the teacher, and then you'd forget about it. And then like 2-3 weeks later, the bookmobile would come up and you'd go get your order. And it was like a stack of paperbacks, like, Bunnicula and Judy Blume books and all that crap. That was so much fun. I miss that.
Yeah. And what do I do for my kid? I order my book on Amazon and it arrives within 12 hours.
Yeah.
Kids these days, let me tell you.
I know. It was that part where you forgot that you actually put in the order. And then it shows up.
It took so long in between. Yes.
Yeah, that was so much fun.
The next school year, your books will arrive.
Exactly.
The way it used to work. Also, a bit of follow-up over the battle over net neutrality. Our old friend Ajit Pai, we talked about this during 2017 when the FCC opened up their public comments and they received 22 million. And of course, that, we were looking at it at the time and it was full of like obvious bullshittery was going on.
Dead people.
And yes, they've looked even further into this now, and they found the comments were, of course, riddled with fraud. One New Yorker who commented in favor of the appeal turned out to be dead.
Yep.
A single 19-year-old college student apparently filed 7.7 million comments against the repeal.
Oh, great.
And a broadband industry group spent millions to submit more than 8.5 million fake comments supporting the decision. So, yes, a lot of these were from lead generation firms, companies intended to help policy campaigns drum up public support and comments. They found that three of these firms fraudulently submitted comments themselves, and net neutrality wasn't their only target. They also, I'm assuming they use bots, so they also unleashed their bots at 100 other advocacy campaigns, including the EPA, the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and various federal and state legislators. So, awesome.
Great.
Yeah, people are kind of pissed about this. This report included comments from people whose names were used without their permission. We knew that was happening as well. One expressed disgust that somebody stole their identity and used it to push a viewpoint that they did not hold. And one other victim may have summed it up best. These are the kinds of actions that make the population lose faith in the system.
No shit, Sherlock.
Yeah.
But we did find a use for GPT-3.
That's true.
Yep. We always wondered where all those millions of words were going a day. Now we know. Now
to the FCC comment system.
Yep. And over on Twitter, Travis sent this in. He says, don't throw your shoulders out from patting yourselves on the back for being right again.
Oh, man. I've been sitting on a heating pad all week, Travis.
I know. Yeah, this is a link from The Motley Fool. More quarterly losses from Uber and Lyft suggest the current ride-hailing model just doesn't work.
What?
Again, file under no shit, Sherlock.
Oh. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Just this last line. It's past time for investors to ask what the plausible path to profitability looks like for these companies. There isn't one.
There isn't one.
Yeah.
If they can't make money juicing the system as they are now, which is lying, cheating, stealing, and basically having indentured servitude instead of employees, then they're not going to make money.
It's a Ponzi scheme. It's absolutely a Ponzi scheme right now because they need more investors to pay for the losses, and you're going to run out of people to invest.
Let us not forget, what is their product, Jason? It is just an app.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yep. Yep. And I don't know how to spell or pronounce this woman's name. You probably do. Emily Ratajkowski?
Ratajkowski? I don't know. She's beautiful. I know that.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Hubba Hubba.
Yeah.
Hubba Hubba.
Yeah.
Well,
Hubba Hubba.
She's selling an NFT. And
Of course she is. Because she's not already rich.
Yes, I know. The Verge likes to point out on this one, how many layers of copyright infringement are in Emily Ratajkowski's new NFT? And
I think I'm going to sell an NFT of the screenshot of Pinterest homepage.
Exactly.
Maybe I can win.
No doubt. It starts off by saying, there's the NFT. An NFT contains essentially just a link, but the terms of sale imply ownership of whatever the NFT links to. Ratajkowski can definitely sell a link. Is she really selling the underlying image? Are all NFTs a sham? Further study is needed. And it goes on to list many, many copyright infringements that are going on in this NFT. And then it goes, the final point is, maybe none of this matters anyway, because, again, what even is an NFT?
It's interesting that they say that, because I still do follow a friend of the show, Sean Bonner, on Twitter, and they have apparently been getting deeply philosophical about what NFTs are, and it literally is blowing my mind. It's taken every fiber of my being not to jump into the debate, because then they're like, you know, the thing that we have to realize is we're not so much selling the image, we're selling the token. To which I wanted to scream, well, who the fuck wants a token? That's not what you're selling.
I know. I'm telling you.
I don't know what you're selling. You don't know what you're selling. You're full of shit.
Philosophers for decades will be trying to unravel the mental dumb fuckery that everybody is trying to do to make these things real in their head so they can cash in.
It is insane, the mental gymnastics that I see taking place right now on Twitter about these things.
Mm-hmm. No, it's fantastic. It's just fun to watch at this point. I'm like, okay, you know, juice as much money as you can out of the system. If you're listening to the show and you're thinking about buying an NFT, send us the money instead. I will make you an NFT.
We will make you a link to our show art. And we will tell you that we are selling the link and not the art or a token or anything like that. Just send us your money and we will give you an NFT of us.
Yes, please, please. Pretty please with sugar on top. Yes. But if you are minting NFTs and selling them, by all means, go with God. Just don't peddle it to our constituency, please.
Yes.
So this just in, autopilot couldn't have been engaged during fatal Tesla crash, says the NTSB.
All right.
There we have it. There we have it. It is impossible for that system to turn on because there were no lines in the road. But also, now they have video footage of the driver and the passenger getting in the car. In a whopping 550 feet later, they run into a tree. So, pilot error.
Why did we go like 2 weeks back and forth about whether the autopilot was on or whether anybody was in the car or not when there's a fucking video?
Apparently, it took him a while to find the video. But, yeah, Musk for the win on this one. Fatality.
Musk had a lot of wins, but we'll get into that in the news.
Yes, we will. Here we go.
In the news.
So, yeah, all the Bit Bros and the Doge dorks were glued to their couches.
That's a new one. I haven't heard Doge dorks before.
I might have coined that one myself. I might have minted it myself.
I was going to say, did you mint that one? Is it on the blockchain now?
Yeah, so they were all glued to their mother's couch watching Saturday Night Live on Saturday night, which probably had, I didn't check this, but I'm guessing probably had the highest live ratings that it's had in years.
Third most popular of the season.
Oh, okay. Yep. Wow, that's surprising.
Chappelle beat him.
Oh, well, that makes sense.
He's actually entertaining.
So, yes, Musk was on and everybody was waiting, and the whole week was full of people snapping up Dogecoin, which drove Dogecoin's cost way up prior to the show. And then as soon as the show started, it tanked.
Yeah, that's the way it went. And I think Professor Galloway said it best was, if you haven't unloaded your Doge by the time that the news segment started, it's way too late. And it turns out that was pretty much the when it hit the shitter. So
yes, the hodlers stopped hodling. At 12:22 a.m., the stock trading app Robinhood tweeted that its platform was having trouble with cryptocurrency, suggesting a stampede or basically a runaway. Everybody sold that had it and made money, and if you're stuck holding it, good luck. Although, you are going to get a second chance here.
Yeah, yeah. Have you watched it? Have you watched any of it?
No. I watched the Twitter reaction.
See, I watched the Twitter reaction, and the people that I follow hated it. They thought it was terrible and that Elon was shit and should be burned at the stake. And so my roommate and I popped a cocktail on Sunday and watched the rerun. And we both laughed and we both enjoyed it because I don't know if you've watched SNL at all in the past like 3 years. It's terrible.
I haven't watched SNL in like 10 years, to be honest.
No, it's terrible. And I mean, I did like the Bill Burr episode and the Dave Chappelle episode this season were good just because of them. But most episodes are terrible. So this was actually probably in the quality of the show, the third best episode of the season. I thought Elon was, you know, Elon. And it was pretty good. I mean, I thought it was funny.
Apparently, my Twitter, the people I follow on Twitter are more savvy than the people you follow on Twitter, because that was the vibe I got as well. Everybody said he actually did quite a good job.
Yeah.
Given his limitations, they wrote to it, and he performed up to standards.
And there was a pre-film segment that Pete Davidson was the star of. I mean, absolutely. It was funny as hell. He's growing. He's totally grown on me. I like him a lot. He's going to be playing Joey Ramone in the Ramones biopic.
Yeah, I saw that.
Anyway, I thought he did a good job.
Yeah, that's what people seem to be saying. So if you're sitting there super sad because your Dogecoin tanked, you will get one more shot here. Here comes another publicity stunt. SpaceX will be launching a Dogecoin-funded moon satellite. Now, we have to check in and see if they're still doing that. Hopefully they sold their Dogecoin to fund things, because if they held on to it, it's going to be a little teeny-meeny satellite, I think. He's following up his Saturday Night Live stint with another more practical pitch for Dogecoin. Canadian engineering firm Geometric Energy Corporation has struck a deal with SpaceX to launch its Doge 1 CubeSat to the moon in the first quarter of 2022. As the name implies, it's entirely funded by Dogecoin. Yay.
How does that actually work? I don't get it. I mean, what does
I'm
that
assuming
mean?
That they had Dogecoin at some point and then they sold it when it was super high and they're using the proceeds. And let's As again, Scott Galloway, Professor Galloway pointed out, at one point, the Dogecoin was worth more than Moderna, the company. So there was a lot of money going on in there for a while. I just love this. Commercial sales VP Tom Ochinero said the mission would demonstrate the viability of crypto beyond Earth.
A foundation for interplanetary commerce.
What a load of shit.
Bullshit. Oh, my God. Yeah.
So, yes, obviously everybody is seeing through this, and this is just a publicity play here, and Doge 1 is one large tech trend mashup, but you never know, maybe your Doge will go up a notch in news of this, but, you know, if you're still hodling, you're a loser.
Well, it all depends on if they put a bunch of NFTs on Doge 1.
They should put the Rajajatsky NFT on there. Exactly. Just the link. A printed out piece of paper with the link.
Print the link around the hull. That'd be great.
That'd be awesome.
Oh, and other things that don't make any sense. Well, this actually does make sense. 40 state attorneys general sent a letter to Mark Zuckerberg urging Facebook to abandon plans to build an Instagram app for kids under 13.
Yes, let's take the app that has been shown and proven to actually depress the shit out of teenagers and give it to them for even under.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah, let's just fucking break them out of the womb. Oh,
unbelievable. I would never, ever, not in a million years, let my kid have this.
Yeah, no doubt. I do like that they have cited Facebook's poor track record of protecting kids online and adults, I might add.
Yes.
Yeah. Hopefully this will get killed in the womb.
Hopefully. The tide seems to be turning against Facebook. I've got to say. I mean, I'm, you know, there is no good publicity coming out about Facebook anymore. Mm-mm. So, but Signal trolled them, and I thought this was genius. Signal tried to run the most honest campaign ad ever on Facebook and immediately got banned. So they basically used Instagram's ad tech tools and Facebook's ad tech tools, obviously. You get the infinite array of data points collected by Facebook's herd of properties. And I urge you, if you're on the fence about Facebook, go in and start the process to place an ad. And you will be terrified at the amount of data and how granular you can get. It will really bother you. So Signal created super targeted ads that were branded with the exact targeting specs that they used. If an ad was targeted towards K-pop fans, it said so. If the ad was targeted towards a single person, the ad said so. Hey, single guy. And all that sort of stuff. It's awesome. I highly encourage everybody to go check out the link in the show notes and go see some of the actual ads that they ran. And Facebook said, hang on a second. No. You can't show this sort of transparency in our system.
What?
And exactly. And Signal's blog post said that the ad account used to run these ads was shut down before the ads could even reach their target audiences. Facebook is denying that, of course, and saying that they're just doing a PR stunt here. You know, this is a stunt by Signal, who have never even actually tried to run these ads, and we didn't shut their ad account down either. If Signal had tried to run the ads, a couple of them would have been rejected because our advertising policy prohibits ads that assert that you have a specific medical condition or sexual orientation,
although we don't seem to
we don't prohibit collecting that data, do we?
No, we don't.
But of course, running the ads was never their goal. It was about getting publicity. And Signal in turn said, we absolutely did try to run those ads. Those ads were rejected and Facebook disabled our ad account. These are real screenshots, as Facebook should know.
Nice.
Yes, and Facebook should be worried at this point because apparently the iOS 14.5 update has actually stopped people from letting Facebook track them. All Only right. 4% of U.S. iPhone users have agreed to app tracking after the update. That opt-in rate climbed to 12% worldwide, but it's clear that most people are turning down requests when they receive prompts. This was a pretty comprehensive study. It followed about 2.5 million daily active users in the U.S. and 5.3 worldwide. So this made me think, Jason, that we have spent all of our time on the show pulling our hair and thinking people just don't care about their privacy. Turns out people are just fucking lazy. They're Shocker. Too lazy to go into settings and sort shit out. But if you put it front and center in front of them, they'll say, hey, yeah, I'll take the privacy. Thank you.
Yep. And here's the other thing. It doesn't work. I turned off the tracking on Instagram. I can go to my browser. I can Google something. And then I will get ads for it in Instagram, even though I have the tracking turned off. So,
well, we talked about this last week. They're getting data points from so many other places.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we know it's not listening to the words that are coming out of your mouth. They don't have to.
Actually, this may be the one thing that has come out of this Apple iOS update, is we now can officially put to rest the fact that they're not listening to you.
Exactly. Well, they might be on Android. Who the fuck knows? It's Android.
That's true. And Barrett wrote in with a pretty funny little comment, but basically the link was Twitter begins to show prompts before people send mean replies.
Ooh.
Yes, they are using an AI to review your tweet before you send it. Want to review this before tweeting? The prompt asks in a sample provided by the company, and you will have three options: tweet as is, edit, or delete. And so they're basically running running your tweet before it gets sent through a word filter to see if you're pissed off.
Yeah.
Or drunk.
Nobody's going to care. What they need.
Well, it does seem to be effective. In tests, it found that if prompted, 34% of people revised their initial reply or did not reply at all. So maybe stop some hate. We'll see.
They revised their reply. So fuck you could have turned into double fuck you, you raging piece of shit. They're like, oh, you know what? That actually wasn't mean enough. I've been prompted. Let me take a minute to formulate a response.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Yeah, and NoSec sent in a pretty terrifying link about better not forget to pay your subscription. And we've talked a little bit in the past about how the car companies are slowly wheedling their way towards subscriptions because the most profitable thing for any company to do is to basically have a bundle and a recurring revenue. And a motorcycle airbag vest has gone ahead and done it. It's got two components, really. There's the vest itself, and then there's a module, which makes the vest actually work. Both are about $400. So you can purchase outright the vest for $400 and then the module for another $400, and then you just own it. Or if you would rather not spend a full $800 and just spend $400, you can spend $12 per month or $120 per year to make the vest actually work.
Okay.
And if you don't pay, you die.
You die.
Basically, that's exactly it. So, like, they actually have a relatively valid reason to kind of do this. They said that basically, you know, maybe you don't ride all year and you don't want to pay for all of this stuff. So you could just pay for the month that you're going to ride or the 2 months that you're going to ride. Or you could just sell it as a product, which I guess they do. And you should probably purchase it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a motorcycle. Motorcycles are money pits anyway. I mean, I had one for a year, and the thing, every time you turn around, you got to buy some damn thing for it. I mean, they're boats. They're just like boats, you know?
Yes.
So $800 for a vest that will, you know, stop you from dying. Not really that much of a capital outlay, I'm thinking.
Yeah, much cheaper than the health insurance.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, seriously, I would have bought this if I was still riding. I'm not.
So yep, and you would have bought it outright, not the subscription-based model.
Oh, yeah, no shit. Absolutely. I'd like when you absolutely want to not die.
I'd hate to be like screaming down the street at like 90 miles an hour going, oh, shit, did I change my credit card?
I know. Oh,
God, I hope that processed.
Oh, my God. Oh, here's an even better one. You're driving down the street, you get a ding on your phone, and you pull it up saying credit card was declined.
And then you crash. Because you're checking your phone on your motorcycle.
Yep. Oh, to tell you that you are going to die. That's we could make a movie about that. Anyway, this was a hat tip to Highlander. This continues to be a big problem. Criminals using the internet for criminal purposes. This is an older story called A Vast Web of Vengeance. It came out in January 30th, 2021 by Kashmir Hill, who we've been following for a while in the New York Times. This is a Toronto-based super Karen who has put thousands and thousands of hateful articles about people on the internet. She should have worked for the, you know, the people who are trying to take down the net neutrality thing. She might have had a job. But she was using revenge sites and customer review sites to get this stuff up there. And it's a chilling read. And there's nothing these people could really do about it. And it's to the point where... You know, I mean, she was living on the streets. They hired a private detective to follow her around. She was doing most of this from a library in Toronto. You know, when it got to the point, the things that she was saying and the damage that she was causing, I don't know about you, but I would have thrown the lawyers away and actually had some vengeance on this woman. I mean, I wanted to go find her and throw her in front of a bus, and I just read the article. I wasn't even affected by it.
It's like, well, look, this existed pre-technology. Technology certainly makes it a lot easier and all of that sort of stuff. But if somebody is bound and determined to ruin your life, they're going to fucking do it.
Yeah, but this is like, I mean, it's so easy. It's just so easy. And we know this. It is so easy. We know this. But it's like these kind of stories really bring it to light. And it's just like, man, I just, you know, sometimes a little stick doesn't hurt is all I'm saying. But
well, yeah, I do hope this woman ends up in jail for a long, 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 long time.
Actually, I think she needs to be in a mental institution personally.
Yeah, it seems to be.
And it's Toronto. Free health care. Grab the bitch and throw her in a bucket somewhere. Anyway, you know what? This whole thing could have been avoided if she just had the Twitter filter.
That's true. She would have thought about it. Today's episode is sponsored by Private Internet Access, America's number one virtual private network, also known as a VPN. Even if you use incognito mode, your internet service provider is storing your browsing data and many times even selling it. But Private Internet Access, or PIA, can help. PIA encrypts and reroutes your internet traffic through one of its own servers, hiding your data from your internet service provider or network admin. And with servers in over 75 countries, you can get unrestricted access to geo-block content around the world. PIA comes with an easy-to-use app and browser extensions for all devices, a rock-solid privacy policy, open-source security, advanced customization settings, and it was just ranked the fastest VPN in the world by PCMag. If you sign up with PIA right now, you can take advantage of a special deal only for GOG listeners. By using our link, gog.show/VPN, you can get complete digital privacy for less than $2 a month and 4 extra months for free, which means only $1.98 a month and up to 83% off. That's so much more inexpensive than virtually every other VPN on the market. And if you get it right now, you can take PIA's 30-day risk-free challenge. You can try it out for 30 days and see if you like it. If not, just return it for a full refund. So go to gog.show/VPN and try out the best VPN on the planet completely risk-free. That's gog.show/VPN.
Warmer, sunnier days are calling, and it's time to fuel up with Factor's No Prep, No Mess meals. Meet your wellness goals in time for summer, thanks to the menu of chef-crafted meals with options like Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Factor Fresh's never-frozen meals are dietitian-approved and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. So no matter how busy you are, you'll always have time to enjoy nutritious, great-tasting meals. Make today the day that you kickstart a new healthy routine. What are you waiting for? Step into a world of endless culinary delight with over 35 enticing meal options and over 60 tantalizing add-ons refreshed weekly. This May, supercharge your wellness journey with dietitian-approved dishes built on ingredients you can count on. Treat your taste buds every day from sunrise to sunset with effortless, nutritious choices spanning from energizing breakfasts to delectable desserts. Indulge in the luxury of restaurant-caliber meals right at home. Savor the sophistication of filet mignon, the freshness of shrimp, and the bold flavors of blackened salmon. Simplify your life with Factor meals, ready in just 2 minutes. Say goodbye to grocery runs, tedious prep, and cleanup. I love these things. I can't even tell you what I had this week because I had so many of them. But that's the great thing about Factor. Every week you have new options, and they're delicious. And you can tailor your eating experience with 6 specialized menu options. Whether you're looking to cut calories, boost protein, go meat-free, or maintain a well-rounded diet, they make it easy to support your lifestyle goals. Tune in to taste, convenience, and wellness with every bite. Head to factormeals.com/grumpy50 and use code grumpy50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box. That's code grumpy50 at factormeals.com/grumpy50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Ah. The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
Media Candy.
Paul writes in and says, "G'day, Jason and Brian. I love your show. As I haven't heard this movie mentioned, I thought I would pass it on. I have an 11-year-old and 13-year-old daughter, so trying to find a movie they will both watch is almost impossible. Anyway, the other night, Mitchell vs. the Machines was recommended on Netflix, and as luck would have it, both girls agreed to give it a go. It had all of us in stitches. It's a cartoon. It's a kid's movie, but it has a techie I'm assuming he meant feel, to them, that I believe suits the attitude of your show. Keep up the great work, and kind regards. A lot of people have been talking about this on our Discord and some other places. It's supposed to be very good. So I will have to give it a watch to see if it's appropriate for a four-year-old before I actually let my kid see it. But I will take a look at it. I will probably watch some of it tonight. Speaking of stuff good for a four-year-old, there's a relatively new show on Nick Jr. called Santiago and the Seas. It's very good. So if you're looking for something for somebody in that age range, I can recommend that. And yeah, there you go. Oh, one other thing I did want to mention. I didn't put this in the show notes. I haven't talked about Lefsetz much on the show in a while because I kind of stopped reading him. But I've picked it up a little bit as we're coming out of the pandemic because he's got some pretty good insight into the music industry and what's going on. More people talk to him than talk to me. And he confirmed something that I've been saying for quite some time. Concerts have gone on sale. Some concerts have even already happened. Some tours have been scheduled. But he is pointing out that this is the music business. And as he states, Live Nation is a public company. And just like Norwegian Cruise Lines, Live Nation cannot put its entire business in jeopardy. Bottom line, if you want to go to the show, you're going to have to show proof of vaccination. Definitely. No matter what Florida says. Because lawyers... because insurance. There is no way in hell shows are going to happen without there being some coverage for these people so that if you go to a show and you get COVID, you don't sue.
Okay. Throw a link to that in the show notes. I've been, you know, Lefsetz is like 50% for me. Sometimes he's right, sometimes he's wrong, but he always annoys. I just don't like the guy.
He's consistent that way.
Yeah, he is consistently annoying, but he does have a lot of insight into the business.
Yes.
I do have to say that after last episode, I did go back and start to rewatch Ted Lasso again. Just as good the second time. Just as good the second time.
What was that comment on Discord about it? It was like, shut up about this show, Brian. I hate sports. Shut up about this show, Brian. I hate sports. My God, this is a good show.
Yeah.
Ups and doodads.
So I've had my vinyl collection up on Discogs for sale for years now, and I've cleared out an awful lot of it, and I only have a little bit left, and Mother's Day's coming around, and my wife casually mentions to me about 2 months ago, you know what I'd like? A record player.
Bitch, I got rid of my records!
Now I was a little frustrated.
Now that you have a house that you can keep them all in, nice and displayed.
I mean, okay, so I'm not entirely heartbroken because a lot of the, obviously, these are records that I bought in the 80s and 90s. It's very low quality, right? So all the records that they're producing now are the heavier gram vinyl, so they sound a lot better, they last longer. But still, the point being, I literally got rid of my entire vinyl collection, and now I bought my wife a record player. I picked up the Audio-Technica Direct Drive Turntable Analog Wireless and USB ATLP-120XBT-USB, and it is pretty cool. The nice part about it is I can plug it in. It can be like nicely displayed somewhere. Doesn't have to connect to anything because it connects wirelessly. I'm playing it on my Amazon Alexa speakers, and it sounds wonderful.
Cool.
It's pretty cool. It's a nice little showpiece thing.
Cool. And
that's
really. Well, you can plug it into USB and rip the vinyl too if you have to, but you don't have any left.
That is true.
You know?
But of course, all that's on Spotify. So don't,
well, if you had like, you know, some albums with deep cuts that don't show up on Spotify, like half of the good albums that I'm finding, it's nice to be able to make your own.
I have to say the really funny thing, though, is we set it up and I got her, her favorite album is Oasis is Definitely Maybe. So pick that up too in a very nice, you know, gatefold, deluxe, whatever edition. And we're playing it, and my kid goes, "What? You can't pause it? No skip to the next track? No." I'm like, "No, kid." And he's, "You can't tell it to do what I want? No.
The way the world used to work, kid. Get used to it.
Yep. And we have a bit of news about Microsoft's development of Windows 10X, which was kind of meant to be as a kind of mobile iOS sort of thing, a stopgap between the next version, full version of Windows. And they started on it and then went, "Nah, we're not going to do it."
I've never even heard of
coming.
It. I've never heard of it.
Well, you never will now. Windows 10X will probably never see the light of day, and they will just keep on working into Windows 10X proper.
Windows will now go to 11. So I got the B-Link SEi8 Mini PC Windows 10 Pro 8th Generation Intel i5-8259U Processor 16GB DDR4 512GB SSD Gigabit Ethernet 4K HD Dual HDMI Wi-Fi 6 BT 5.0 Fan Support Auto Power On from Amazon.
So I don't even know what that is. After all of that, I'm not sure what this is.
It is a it's a PC. It is a mini. Oh, okay. It's a mini PC that's about the size of an Apple TV, and comes with Windows 10 Pro, Intel i5 processor, 16 gigabytes of RAM, and 512 gigabyte SSD, which I just kind of said.
Plus support auto power on.
And yes, as you can plug in a smaller hard drive, so you can have a bigger one. Like, you know, this one, the SSD on here is on a stick because I was getting it to basically, I got this as a miner for or a plotter for my Chia coin, and also to run the farm, because I'm running the farm on a very nice Mac Mini right now that I would like back. I'd like all my computers back. So I got this thing to run the farm. It's $500. So for a PC that's, you know, not too bad for $500. It's cheaper than getting another Mac Mini. So I thought I'd give it a shot, and it seems to work pretty good. You know, it's for you know, if I had to get a PC for somebody who wasn't, like, you know, a gamer or anything and just needed it for, you know, the standard web browsing and email and docs and stuff like that, I would totally get one of these. It's tiny. You just put it out of the way, slap a keyboard and a monitor and a mouse on it, and you're good to go.
For the love of God, Jason, can you please just order a Chia Pet and put it on top of this thing?
I got it now. Now
that you said it. It's the perfect size for it.
Now that you said it, yeah, I think I'm going to have to.
That's got
to
be your photo. Yeah, you got to do that.
Yeah.
And I saw a really interesting long-form article, again, talking about music formats gone by, how Sony paved the way for modern music production. And this is all about that digital audio tape, which was the shiznit back in the day. I remember saving money in college to get a DAT because it was the best quality and I was doing music production. And that's kind of what this gets into. It's a really interesting article about how without DAT, there may not have been electronic music as it came out. So very interesting article. If you're into old school music production and the history behind it, I'd highly recommend reading this. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Old school music piracy too. Cause I remember a friend of the show, MXV, he had tons of DATs. He would take his DAT player to concerts and plug it into the soundboard and get perfect copies of them.
Yes, that's nice.
Yeah.
Well done.
Try and get a DAT player that works nowadays, though. Very difficult.
Yeah, I know.
Very, very difficult.
I still have some DAT tapes in the box somewhere, but no DAT player.
Ah, send them to Mike. I think he found a working one to digitize all of his shows.
At the library.
I have finished Project Hail Mary by Andy Weir.
All right.
It is fix-it porn, just like you would expect.
I heard it was the Martian D.
It is the Martian, but D, for sure. here's the funny thing about listening to audiobooks. Now, you get, you know, readers who do a wide swath of audiobooks, and you start to equate the books that you're listening to right now with the books you've heard in the past. And this book was read by the same guy that read the Bobiverse series.
Okay.
So
that might get confusing in the head.
It was. It was really confusing. But I have to say, all the jokes landed harder in this book because I thought they were written for Bob and not this guy in the book. I have the protagonist in my head being Bob, but it's not Bob. It's a guy. I liked it. I really enjoyed it. I don't know if you're not into the fix-it porn type of thing, might not be for you because there's a lot of it. There's a lot of it, you know. I think Adam Savage has locked himself in a closet with some hand cream and tissues and won't come out for another year. But it's on that level. It's kind of like, you know, how I mentioned in Cory Doctorow's last book, how he started off doing the same thing, but just talking about computers and how to set up a computer just to do this thing to move the storyline along.
Right.
This is kind of like that, but really entertaining.
Okay.
Like, Corey's was just mind-numbingly boring. This guy makes it fun.
All right. I mean, I'm up for reading it. I really enjoyed The Martian.
I think you should. This really does have the same kind of feel to it. It is definitely different. It's still in space, which is great. Different problems, different scenarios, and a lot of different plot twists. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. So, you know, it's not The Martian, but it is just a hair under for me. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Cool. Definitely going to read it as soon as I finish the very long book I'm currently doing.
Security? Ha!
Dave Bittner is back. Dave is the host of the CyberWire podcast and a co-host of the social engineering podcast Hacking Humans with Joe Kerrigan, co-host of the Caveat Show with Ben... The Caveat Show. Trying to ad-lib. You now have the Caveat Show with Ben Yellen. Where they discuss law and policy and surveillance and privacy. And finally, he's the co-host of Recorded Future, where he takes you inside the world of cyber threat intelligence. Welcome, Dave.
Hello. Breaker 5-9er, Breaker 5-9er. Right. So apparently the ham community came out in full force to support you, Dave.
Imagine that. I called it, right?
Yep.
You did.
I called it. We got a message from Rook, who says he was a manager at Radio Shack and a current ham radio operator. They never tested at Radio Shack, but Dave was describing a bunny hunt, and we ham users were instrumental in organizing search and rescue for Mount St. Helens and other disasters.
Yeah, absolutely. Hams literally save the day when there's natural disasters. They step up, and they get made fun of a lot, but when bad things are happening, they are kind of
like Robin in Batman and Robin. We laugh at him, but he does step up.
Yeah. I mean, they're kind of critical infrastructure in a way that, I mean, and they have a long, proud tradition of doing so. So thank you. Thank you for your service.
And Ben Thornton writes, I'm one of those ham folks that you guys were chatting about in the Hamming It Up episode. Many years ago, okay, so I'm a bit older, I participated in many so-called hidden transmitter hunts, which we now know are bunny hunts, with the fancy homemade direction-finding gear. This was often followed by a gathering at a nearby restaurant for some post-event banter.
Right. No girls allowed.
Well, I mean, they're invited. It's just they tend to run the other direction.
Sure. I mean, it's an open invitation.
They're the bunnies you're hunting for, probably.
Right. Yeah.
Lately, I've managed to get myself bitten by the FPV drone flying bug, and I have now learned what it really means to spend money on a hobby. Ain't that the truth? More notably, I've been pleasantly surprised that many of my fellow drone pilots have gotten their technician class ham licenses so that they can be legal when using some of the ham frequencies to transmit their video feeds to their goggles. I thought that was pretty cool.
That is cool.
Mm-hmm. Well, I bet that brings all the bunnies to the yard.
You can just...
if they run away, sound? You send your drone after them.
Right. That sounder is panties dropping all over the world.
In turn, FPV drones with GoPro cameras can be used for the aerial photography of the more exotic ham radio field day operations. This is an example of one hobby's symbiotic relationship with others by borrowing each other's tech. It's a win-win. Well, thank you, Ben.
Thanks, indeed. Ben. And back when I was a video guy, I used to enjoy going to the ham fests because it was a great place to buy all sorts of connectors and cables, and you never knew what you were going to find at a ham fest. Used video equipment and all sorts of things. So I always enjoyed there is definitely a spiritual connection with the ham radio operators and the other technical geeks who are into all that old school electronics stuff.
Yeah. What happens when the ham fest gets up with the cheese fest? Is it bring your own buns?
Well, I will tell you, there was one year when I went to NAB, which is the National Association of Broadcasters Convention. It's a big trade show in Las Vegas. I think it's second to
CES.
CES in terms of size. And we happened to be there at the same time that the AVN awards were there.
They always ran in concert. We were probably on other sides of the same room because I used to go to AVN, the whole AVN Adult Expo.
So me and a bunch of my fellow geeks are on our way to one of the hotels, one of the halls where they're having some sort of Final Cut Pro super meet. And on our way there, we're passing by a different hall that is being used for the AVN Awards. And coming the other way down the hallway are, I'm exaggerating, there are women in their underwear, barely their underwear, coming out of this event. And of course, it's the culture clash that you imagine it is. It's all of these TV geeks going in one direction, you know, beautiful, barely clad women from the AVN Awards, and they're just staring each other down. Like,
they use that as B-roll footage for Revenge of the Nerds. That's
right, exactly. That's exactly what it was. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. By the way, Jason, you mentioned you got your software-defined radio kit.
I did, but unfortunately, I've been sick for several days, so I haven't really had a chance to plug it in yet. It's sitting there on the desk, but I'm getting back in the saddle, so hopefully later this week I'll plug it in. How about you? Have you been experimenting?
I dabble. Uh-huh. But I'll wait for you to get yours up and running. We can have a good talk about it. Is there any development with the Ring camera situation? Any new data there?
Nope. Everything is 5x5. Every delivery has been on both cameras. So I have to say that this one's busted.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. I can live with that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, let's move on to more geeky stuff. We had May the 4th. And the new series dropped, Star Wars The Bad Batch. Dave, did you watch it?
I have watched the first episode, and I enjoyed it very much.
I have watched two. I found it enjoyable. Apparently, there's already a brewing problem in that when Disney first purchased the Star Wars universe, they wiped all the extended universe and said that wasn't canon, and they promised that everything that they would release would be canon and the same universe and all that, and apparently The Bad Batch is already retconning some of the comic books. So there's some very angry nerds out there. But whatever. I thought it was enjoyable. I've got an issue with getting into the animated stuff that I don't know if I'm going to get over. And it could be partially because my kid is of an age where all he watches are animated things. So I've had animation up the ass.
Right.
And just can't I can't make a leap from Paw Patrol to adult animation.
Right.
That was a segment at the AVN Awards, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure it was.
Yeah, coincidentally, both of them were named Paw Patrol. I don't know.
Oh boy. Yeah. So I found it good, but I found myself comparing it to a metric of what if this were real people and if this were a Mandalorian real person show and how much better it would be.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I
would agree with that. I enjoyed it. I would say it felt like Star Wars, but it did feel a little dumbed down. And I don't know how I feel about all of, and I know this horse has left the barn, but I don't know how I feel about all of the clones being Australian.
Yes, they are Australian for some reason.
But, yeah. I thought some of the writing's a little bit clunky, but I enjoyed it. It feels like Star Wars to me. It's a fun, one of the things I like about these sorts of shows is that they allow us to go on these little side adventures that aren't worthy of their own movie. But they give us a taste of the Star Wars universe, things we've wondered about. And so we get to see them in shows like this. And that's fun.
Yeah. And what I thoroughly enjoyed, though, were some of the other releases that they put up there. The Star Wars biomes and the vehicle flythroughs, which just tickled my geeky heart.
What are those, by the way? I don't know what those are.
Biomes is just fly-throughs, like, faked drone footage. Obviously faked, it's not going to be real because, you know, Tatooine does not exist. But drone flyovers of the various planets in the Star Trek, Star Wars. Ooh, I almost said Star Trek. Jesus,
man.
The pitchforks would have fucking come out.
Bite your tongue.
In the Star Wars universe. So that was very cool. I mean, it's like, you know, it's like the Apple TV screensaver except for dorks. It's awesome.
Is this like an extras thing on The Bad Batch, or how do you get to this?
No, these are just part of Disney Plus. They're just in there. And then they're also doing a series of vehicle flythroughs. They started with two. One was the Millennium Falcon, and another was a Star Destroyer. We're going to continue to get more.
Mm-hmm.
And they're very, very cool. I mean, I thoroughly enjoyed them.
Yeah, I particularly like the biomes ones. And what I like about them is that there, some of them take place during things that you know about from the Star Wars universe.
Yes, and you actually see battles going down on the planet.
Right. And you're just off at a distance, you know, so it's this peaceful view of this planet and off in the distance, very small. There's Imperial walkers that are going across the planet and fighting.
You see the Rebel base off in the distance and you know what's about to happen.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I agree. It's a simple idea, well executed.
Yeah, exactly.
I was surprised we didn't see Endor, perhaps for a future episode.
Perhaps, yeah. They must be saving some.
Nobody likes the Ewoks. Come on, let's be serious.
but they'd be so far in the distance.
From a distance. Right. So I want to dive in and watch this, and then I always get confused on, you know, what's canon, what's not, what's who, when, what, where, why are we watching this? Because The Mandalorian, I was confused up until like the second to last episode. I didn't know when it was happening. I thought it happened later in the future, so... I went and I found a Star Wars timeline. This is StarWarsCanonTimeline.com. And it's unfortunately, it's a WordPress site, so you can see all of the different media in chronological order, so you can see what you're watching, where it fits in the timeline, but you can't reverse sort it, so you're always starting at the latest or the oldest stuff, and you have to kind of paginate through and all that stuff. I'm like, okay, can I just sort by time and show me the list?
Yes, I'm looking at like two pages of the High Republic, of which I have paid zero attention.
Yeah. This is one of those things where it's like, if I knew I was going to live forever and I had like, you know, some downtime, I would go through and start at the beginning. But, you know, time's a wasting. I also checked out Wikipedia. I like Wikipedia.
Yeah. Wikipedia is great. I did send the Star Wars canon timeline to my son, Jack, who is my viewing companion for things like The Bad Batch. And actually, we're making our way through Clone Wars as well right now. But his response to me was, so many books, so many books.
Yep. The one thing on Wikipedia that's kind of fun is that there's On This Day. So on May 11th, Terrence McGovern is born. A bunch of things are born and...
Yes. Born and released.
Dies and published, and there's YouTube stuff. There's a lot of stuff that happened on this day in May 11th in the Star Wars galaxy. So
the Star Wars galaxy is vast, particularly if you do get into what is no longer considered canon. I mean, I was in my high school years, I think I read, 200 to 300 Star Wars books that were all within that period and all went away. Because, I mean, some of it was quite silly, but, you know, it was what it was.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, me too.
All right, should we talk about the real world?
Yeah, why not?
We gotta. Okay. So details of the industry-hobbling Colonial Pipeline cyber attack are starting to emerge. It appears to be a group called DarkSide, which stole almost 100 gigabytes of data in 2 hours on May 6th.
Speaking of Star Wars.
Of a double extortion scheme, yes, where intruders threaten to leak both company data and lock them out of their own information. We do not know if they've paid a ransom yet. I do have a question for you, Dave. Do you think this is the, in terms of regular, normal human beings affected, do you think this is the biggest cyber attack that has happened that at least we are aware of?
Yes, I think so. Unquestionably. Largest on U.S. soil, for sure. Mm-hmm. And yeah, this is a biggie.
Gas prices up basically everywhere.
Could be.
Really half of the East Coast fuel supply, including airports, which could restrict travel.
But they've apologized, Brian.
This is my neck of the woods that it does affect, so we'll see. I haven't seen any effects so far, but, you know, there's an airport near here, and we'll see what it does to gas prices. I like Graham Cluley on his website today. I think the headline was something like, you know, the dark side, the people who run dark side are surely shitting their pants right now.
Oh, God, yes. They are cashing in and heading to the hills.
Well, they did come out and say that this is not politically motivated or anything like that. It was pure money grab, right? So they're already trying to say, you don't have to send the army after us. We just wanted money.
Oh, but we do.
So there's an important point here that I think is not clear in a lot of the coverage, and that is that DarkSide, they run an affiliate model.
Yes.
So it's
as a service, right?
Right. It's ransomware as a service. So what likely happened here is that one of DarkSide's affiliates just did some kind of a spray and pray attack, and they hit this pipeline. And now everybody's in trouble. So, you know, this is like if you're McDonald's and one of your franchises goes
God
rogue.
God damn it, Bob.
Right, right. But, yeah, when you have the attention of the president of the United States and he's commenting on it, bad – when you take down the primary oil pipeline for the entire eastern southeastern section of the United States, this is surely going to bring the hammer down on you, even in places like Russia where the hammer rarely comes down. Mm-hmm. At the very least, they're going to get a, hey, knock it off. And at the very worst, other bad things could happen to them that happen in folks in that neck of the woods. So yeah. We'll see.
We shall see. Yeah. And we've also learned this week that it's already possible to hack AirTags.
I love this. I'm in. I want some AirTags now.
9to5 Mac is reporting that security researcher Thomas Roth has already cracked the microcontroller for Apple's item tracker, dumping its firmware and discovering you can reflash it for your own purposes. Whoopsies. Mm-hmm. So
I saw someone using it to Rickroll already.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we can laugh about this one. The bigger threat, of course, about the AirTags is the privacy concerns. And if you do not have, you know, you're okay if you've got an iPhone, because an iPhone will tell you if one's on you and following you around. If you've got an Android, you're fucked.
Yeah. Well, but it starts beeping after a certain amount of time. Right. So if it doesn't come within range of its home devices, it starts beeping after, I think, 3 days is what it is right now.
I don't know if that's going to do much. I don't know about you guys, but certainly in my college years and shortly thereafter, I'd been in plenty of people's houses that just had their fire alarms beeping away because they needed a new battery, and they seemed to not care or notice.
I think that's true.
Or husbands everywhere buying their wives Android phones for their birthdays.
Yeah. I mean, I guess the point is Apple kind of knows that this is a potential use and they're trying to...
They're doing the best they can with it.
I think they're trying in good faith to do the best that they can. I will say I was listening to the ATP podcast, one of their most recent episode, I think.
Traitor.
And they were talking about...
You traitor! Listening to the All enemy. Right.
Okay, I didn't...
I was not aware we were at war.
I seem to have hit a nerve.
What, next you're going to tell me you're listening to Reply All?
Well, I'm going to get in touch with Darkseid and see if they can do something about this.
Yeah, so... but they were complaining about how it's really hard to attach this thing to anything because of the shape of it. It's bulbous. It has no flat surfaces, so...
Yeah, I've seen people drilling holes in it, and there's, like, YouTube videos about, like, if you go... You have to measure 5 millimeters over this way and 10 millimeters down, and you can put a hole through it right there so you can attach it to something. And
right, right. Yeah. Whereas its competitors are designed to go on a keychain without having to go inside of something else.
By miraculously putting a hole in it.
Right. Imagine
yes,
that.
They have hole technology.
Well, that was part of the point.
Ever since
making...
Johnny left Apple, I just don't know what's happening. Did you think to put a fucking hole in it?
Right. Design is how it works. That's what Steve Jobs said. But... yeah, as I think they pointed out over on ATP, it's as if this device is designed to sell you another thing. It would be that a $10, you know, little plastic case around it, or a $500 leather one.
Yes.
Oh, have they never ever seen the iPhone? I mean, that is designed to buy a case, a screen protector. Everything that they make is designed to buy a case, you know, or sell a case.
Yeah, I mean that's true. That's
true. I like to live on the edge. No case.
Brian goes commando.
That's right.
Yeah.
I actually do too. I don't put a case on my iPhone.
Oh, I can't live with that kind of anxiety. Are you kidding me?
The Gorilla Glass or whatever they're using these days has gotten so good.
Yeah.
It's not like 5 to 6 versions ago where if you sneezed at it, the fucking thing shattered.
Well, and AppleCare Plus has also come a long way too. So you just pay your $9.99 a month tithing to the Apple.
Your pound
gods.
Of flesh.
Exactly. Yeah. And then you can basically throw it, you know, on the ground and stomp on it when you walk into the Apple store and say, give me another one. So
they frown on that, folks. Don't do that.
But you can do it.
That's why everyone at the local Apple store loves to see Jason coming in.
Here he comes with a sledgehammer again.
I've got to deal with this guy again. Like every time, it's like every time the battery runs out, he throws it on the ground and stomps on it and walks in.
The bonfire of laptops in front of the Apple store.
Right. Give me a new one. Yes, yes. Jason. Here you go.
Yes, well, sir. You should have made Angry Birds load faster. Now I'm angry. Mm-hmm. Here we go.
Right.
He's what do you mean we don't have any more iPhones to sell in here? There's a stack right over there. That's the Jason stack. We always keep them handy.
Mm-hmm. He just comes in. It's usually in mid-afternoon. He comes in, he grabs his new one, and off he goes.
He's a little hangry when he misses lunch, and then there goes the new one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right.
Well.
He peed it off.
I guess we'll do this again next week, guys.
I guess we will. All right. May the force be with you.
Always.
And also with you.
Closing shout outs.
A sad shout out this week. We lost Tawny Katane. She died at age 59. She was
White Snake video, right?
The White Snake girl. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. She was in Bachelor Party as well, which was an old funny movie with Tom Hanks.
Oh, God. That was a great movie.
Yeah. It was back then. I don't know if that's got legs. We might have to revisit that one.
It probably needs a few disclaimers at the beginning.
Oh, it needs a lot of disclaimers.
Some trigger warnings.
Yeah. I never heard the term before, and I was always confused because I was pretty young when I saw that.
We all were. Yes.
Yeah. They just kept talking about laying that pipe, and I'm like, huh? What? What? I didn't get it for quite some time. Oh, Jesus.
Oh,
it's one of those.
Right.
Yeah. So fare thee well, Tawny. We will always have the White Snake video. Mm-hmm. And over at Patreon, we've got Rick, Andrew, Nagold, 0123, and JW. And he says, a couple months back, you guys mentioned chia farming. Thanks a bunch for that. Managed to farm multiple chia before it hit exchanges yesterday. Suffice it to say, I made back my initial farming investment times 15. Gonna sell half and keep half as free roll. Party time. Love the podcast. Gonna use a leaf of chia to patron you all. And he did. Thank you.
Thank you. And you also are required now to get a chia pet and put it on top of the machine that is doing the farming. I want pictures, and we need to come up with a hashtag.
Okay. Yes, he does. Yeah, I've done some back of the napkin calculations, and from the people who listened to me when I first mentioned it, I think our total gross profit is around $75,000 now. So if you'd have listened,
Patreon.com/GOG.
I'm
Give
saying
back.
Share the wealth. You know, where's our taste? Give us a taste. JW, you know, you did good, but, you know, it's still going up. So I'm just saying, you got to do what you got to do, man.
That's right. And Jared wrote us over there. So I'm starting to think that I must live in an alternate universe or something. I've yet to have any issues with the Apple Podcast app. That's how I've been listening to y'all since I switched back to an iPhone years ago. What exactly don't y'all like it? Is it maybe because I'm just a listener and not a creator?
No, it was missing a ton of episodes. They have since fixed some of it. It seems like all of our episodes are back, but their titles are still screwed up. The descriptions are all jacked up. They screwed the pooch on this, basically because they went from – you used to be able to, when you opened the Apple Podcast app, it would talk to us, get our RSS feed, and it would build our library based on the RSS feed directly from us. Apple decided in the interim to say, no, we don't want to do that anymore. They're going to go out and basically scrape all the RSS feeds and build a massive database that you then ping from your Apple Podcast app. Except they really suck at RSS scraping. And they completely botched their spider. Something that, you know, I think any competent programmer has done, you know, a million times over. But this is, you know, the Apple Podcast division is the mailroom. That is where you start or where you end your career at Apple. So it is, it's either fresh talent or don't give a fuck talent. And I'm thinking on this one, don't give a fuck talent. So they're working their way through it, but, yeah, sorry. It's out of our hands. You know, if you want consistent results, check another podcast player.
There you go. And over at PayPal, we've got donations from Andrew, Breed, Mark, Michael, Ralph, Stephen, Miles, and Sloan.
And over at iTunes, hey, we got some reviews this week. Ninja0211 says, best part of my commute. Longtime listener, first time reviewer. I've been listening to these two grumps for a little over a year after hearing about them on the Cyberwire, and it's almost scary how right they are. Every Wednesday, I look forward to my commute home since I can generally listen to the entirety of the episode uninterrupted. The security segment with Dave is always entertaining, and finding out about Dave's furry tendencies justified him being my spirit animal. Keep it up, Grumps. You're keeping me sane through this pandemic. Well, thank you, Ninja.
Thank you. And we also got a 5-star rating from The Real SMY. Yes, I was one of the three that laughed at CQ and I got the ape masks. Good episode, guys. Closing shoutouts, Jason CCC. I took this as a personal request to leave a review, so I have. Consistently good show that is both educating and entertaining. Thank you, and stay grumpy. Thank you.
And we have a review from Stuart over at Podchaser, which is a 5 stars and 5 paragraphs long. So if you are on Podchaser, feel free to read that review because we don't have an
hour. Way to punt that one.
We don't have an hour. Until next time, I'm Jason DeFilippo.
And I'm Brian Schulmeister. Thanks for listening to Grumpy Old Geeks. If you enjoy the show, please consider visiting gog.show/donate to help us keep the lights on, and we'll love you forever. Show notes for this episode are at gog.show/506. From there, you can find all the links we talked about in this episode. You can also head over to gog.show/contact and send us your feedback or questions we can read on the air. And if you're so inclined, please head up to gog.show/review and toss us a 5-star and snarky review. And if you don't already, follow us in your podcast player of choice. Just go to gog.show/follow, where you can find convenient links to every podcast player so you can get the show as soon as it drops, except for Apple Podcasts. And if you know someone who has too much hope in their hearts and a spring in their step, then definitely tell them about the show. Misery loves company. Stay grumpy.
Calling all coffee drinkers. If you've been trying to enhance your daily coffee routine, then Quest has got your back with their brand new iced coffees. Now available in 2 delightfully delicious flavors that'll be sure to add an extra pep in your step. Vanilla latte and mocha latte. Quest has been on a mission to help fuel you with protein-forward foods you'll love. Each bottle of Quest iced coffee is packed with 200 milligrams of caffeine, the same amount as 2 cups of regular coffee, plus 10 grams of protein per serving to help you supercharge your day. And did I mention that they only contain 1 gram of sugar? It might just be time to cheat on your iced coffee with iced coffee. Find Quest iced coffees on Amazon.com/Quest Nutrition. That's Amazon.com/Quest Nutrition.